Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Dead or Alive by Ralph Cotton. Narrated by Ken Jackson. With performances by Mort Shelby, Michael Glenn, Patrick Bussing, Thomas Keegan, Alyssa Wilmoth, James Keegan, Gary Tells, Joe Brack, Timothy Lynch, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Gregory Gorton, James Konachek, Bradley Smith, David Coyne, Tim Carlin, Michael John Casey, Christopher Sheeran, Ken Jackson, Eric Messner. Dead or Alive, Book 1, Hangman's Choice.
Federal Deputy Sullivan Hart lay on his side in the dirt, feeling the hot bite of the sun, even through his riding duster, his gloves, and his batwing brush chaps. He raised his high-crowned Stetson enough to run a hand back across his damp hair. Then he leveled the hat brim down and looked over at the prisoner, Quick Charlie Sims, who lay 3 feet away with the telescope raised to his eye.
You've seen enough, Sims. Give it to me.
Oh, 1 second.
Right now, Sims.
When Quick Charlie still didn't make a move, Sullivan reached over his rifle barrel.
I said now.
He poked Quick Charlie in the ribs, sharp enough to make his point.
Okay.
Quick Charlie Sims lowered the telescope from his eyes and handed it over to Sullivan Hart.
Looks like your buddy 2-Jack Roth is doing some kind of Indian death chant down there, rocking back and forth. Maybe you'd better take another look.
I've already seen him.
Hart wiped a gloved hand across the rear lens, raised it, and looked down once more into the sandy draw. More than 700 yards away, he saw the Cherokee deputy, 2-Jack Roth, sitting in the dirt, his big hands bound behind his back by a strip of rawhide.
You don't know Roth.
Oh, I know him all right. And I've seen him in much better shape.
He's trying to get his hands loose. He's just biding his time, getting ready to make a move.
Yet as Hart spoke, he grimaced at the new sight before his eyes. Near 2-Jack Roth, Joe Marr, the cattle rustler they'd been searching for, stood with a rifle in his hand and a worried look on his face.
Well, I'd say he'd better make his move in a hurry before this sun boils his brains out.
Sullivan Hart lowered the lens, clapped it shut, and shoved it inside his bib front shirt.
Sit tight, Roth.
Holding his rifle low to the ground to block any glare of the sun off the barrel, Hart levered around up into the chamber.
What about me?
What about you? If I'd had any say in it, you'd still be sweating out in a jail cell.
But since I'm not...
Quick Charlie shook his cuffed wrists.
Shouldn't you give me a pistol or something? At least take these cuffs off of me. What kind of fix am I going to be in if something goes wrong for you down there? You can't leave me here this way, for crying out loud.
Who said I'm going to leave you here? You're going down there with me.
Oh, no way, Sully. That's even worse. Not with these cuffs on, not without a gun.
That's all I'm going to take from you, Sims. Now get yourself moving.
Hart stood and yanked Charlie to his feet.
Okay. Take it easy. I'm coming.
Sims stumbled along in front of Sullivan Hart as Hart pushed him toward the horses hidden by a stand of dried brush.
But Judge Parker is going to hear about this. You can count on it.
Tell the judge whatever you want to, but I'd be careful if I were you. You're waiting extradition to Colorado. Once I tell him how you acted out here, he might decide to go on and hang you himself. Save Colorado the trouble.
What report? Nobody said anything about you giving him a report on me. Deal was, I show you where Joe Marr was hiding out. I showed you Marr's place 2 days ago. Tracking him out here wasn't a part of it. You had no right dragging me along. You're not serious about that report, are you? It's bad enough that I'm facing charges up in Creed for a bank I didn't even rob.
I've already heard your sad stories, Sims. Now get that horse between your knees and get a move on. Two Jack Roth needs help down there.
Say, didn't I hear the judge mention that your pa headed out with Two Jack Roth over toward Robber's Roost?
Yep, he did. They went scouting for stolen cattle, same as us.
But I didn't see no sign of your pa down there. Did you?
No, I didn't, and that's got me worried.
Oh. I'm sorry, Sully. I shouldn't have been giving you a hard time. If there's any way that I can help...
Shut up, Sims. Let's go. Pull up on this end of the draw. I won't put you between them and me when the shooting starts.
Thanks. I won't make a run for it when the shooting starts. You've got my word.
Your word, huh?
That's right, my word. Once I give my word on something, I never break it. I'll stick here until things are settled.
That's real comforting, Sims.
They stepped the horses down along the steep trail toward the low rolling brush country below. On the ground in the belly of the draw, Two Jack Roth sat rocking back and forth.
Une clonahi uachi.
He ventured a gaze all around the draw, getting the layout of the place in his mind. His wrists at work, keeping pressure on the damp rawhide, stretching it. He slid a guarded glance past the knee of Joe Marr standing beside him toward the entrance of the cave at the end of the draw, where two more men stood with their rifles cradled in their arms. These two were well-dressed, but they had the rough look of barroom brawlers about them. Two Jack listened for any sound from within the cave. Things didn't look good for his partner, Deputy Coleman Hart. Two Jack had heard three pistol shots, but nothing since. To the right of the cave entrance stood a rickety line of makeshift corral fencing that stretched along the belly of the draw, upward and out of the rocky land. Inside the corral, over 100 head of cattle milled and bawled, standing obscured in a cloud of churning dust. Outside the corral, seven horses stood hitched to the railing. These were big, well-kept horses, wearing expensive tack and saddles. From the cave entrance 40 feet away, one of the suited riflemen signaled to Joe Marr.
Hey, cowboy, can't you shut that engine up? Bad enough we've got to listen to cattle all day.
You heard them, engine? Shut that singing up. These boys take a notion and they'll walk over and put a bullet in your head. Mine too.
Joe Marr's ragged boot toe reached out and tapped Two Jack Roth's side.
Uda ne you ne cha. Did they scare you, Marr? Because they should. Do you think these men are going to take a chance on you? Leave a live witness here? You're in no better spot than I am.
Shut up, Roth. I see where I stand in this, engine. They showed up last night, met the Englishman this morning, and been here all day. What the hell can I do about it? I'm just an honest cattle rustler.
First of all, you can stop calling me Injun. It might keep me from bending that rifle barrel across your back once this is all over.
All over? You just said yourself neither one of us is going to come out of this alive.
Don't soil yourself, Ma. I've had a vision. In that vision, I saw you going to jail for about 2 to 5 years for cattle rustling. But you seemed happy about it, because you knew that Judge Parker could have hanged you for rustling and for shooting Dub French last year. Instead, he went easy on you for helping me and Coleman Hart get out of this mess.
Oh, that's Roth. But for my money, Coleman Hart's already dead in there. How can me and you do anything to save ourselves? There's too many of them.
We can start by you getting us over near the corral. Tell them I have to relieve myself.
What are you going to do?
You'll see when the time comes. Stick close to me. Come on. Act like you're helping me up. Loosen this rawhide some as you do.
Lord, I hope you know what you're doing here.
You want my vision to come true or not?
All right. Here goes.
Marr raised the Two Jack to his feet and shoved him toward the corral.
Hey, where do you think you're going, cowboy?
He's got the pizzle!
Joe Marr reached a hand down to Two Jack's bound hands as if checking him, gripping the rawhide and stretching it back and forth as he did.
Bro, you nearly got this thing loose enough already.
I know. I would have jumped you from behind and broke your neck if you hadn't sided with me.
Dang. Well, I'm on your side now, too, Jack. You just let me know what to do.
Quickly, the two men moved toward the corral. They got down flat on their bellies inside the corral.
I can't breathe. Can't see a thing.
Follow me.
The two men began crawling forward.
Hey, cowboy! Come on out where we can see ya!
Oh, hell, Roth! It ain't working!
Stay down. Don't do anything until I get in position. When they come for you, I'll slip in and get Coleman out of there.
Hey, hey there, cowboy! Don't make me come after ya!
They've got us, Roth! Run for it!
Joe Mars stood up in the dust, pulling his pistol. Two Jack Roth rolled out from under the corral rails just in time to feel the herd begin its move. In the confusion, he lost sight of Mar. There was nothing Two Jack Roth could do now but turn on his stomach in the dirt and raise his pistol. The second shot lifted one of the riflemen a foot off the ground and sent him backward, his bowler hat spinning off his head. Within the roiling dust, Roth couldn't get sight of the other rifleman as the man moved quickly across the ground and in among the horses. The man hurried to gather the reins before the nervous horses could rear against the corral rail and pull it loose. Inside the corral, the spooked herd began circling from the inside out, collapsing the rails and spilling out like water through a broken dam. They thundered up out of the draw. Roth's next shot was aimed at the men who now came running out of the cave entrance. At the cave entrance, a man in a dress suit and a rider duster aimed at Roth.
Get him!
Above the edge of the draw, Sullivan Hart and Quick Charlie Sims had reined their horses back hard at the first sound of gunfire. Now they struggled to sidestep their horses out of the herd's path. A widening torrent of horns streaked past them until they managed to get atop a rise. Yet once there, in full view above the edge of the draw, they were in the sights of the enemy.
Get out!
Sims' horse caught a bullet in its chest. Sullivan slipped from the saddle. He threw his rifle over the Morgan side and returned fire. The men below were mounting, their horses spinning beneath them as they fired and made their getaway.
Get these off of me!
This time, one of the men pitched backward and rolled off his horse's rump, his boots still caught in the stirrup. The horse dragged him away in a spray of blood, the tails of the man's riding duster flapping in the dusty air. Through the dust, Hart saw Two Jack Roth stand up. Another man toppled from his saddle. But the remaining riders disappeared over the high edge of the draw. And in a second, they were out of sight, pounding out along a low stretch of valley amid the rolling hills.
Come on, Sims!
Hart grabbed Sims' shoulder and hauled him up behind him.
Coming in, Roth!
Sully? I sure hoped that might be you up there.
Where's my dad?
Two Jack Roth nodded toward the cave entrance with a grim expression.
He's inside, Sully. Maybe I ought to go in first.
Sullivan Hart pulled Quick Charlie Sims down behind him.
Nah, I'll go in.
He looked around the draw for either Roth's or his father's horse. He saw neither.
Who were those men, Roth?
But Hart didn't wait for an answer. As he entered the cave with his pistol drawn, Two Jack Roth took up the reins to the Black Morgan Cross and held the horse steady.
What are you doing out here, Sims? You're supposed to be in Judge Parker's jail, waiting to be shipped up to Creed.
I never robbed that bank in Creed.
That's for a jury in Creed to decide. Why are you out here?
Call it my civic duty, Two Jack. Judge Parker sent me along to show Sully where Mar lives. I gave him my word I wouldn't cut out on him.
Your word.
Yeah, my word. Why is it every time I say that, you people act like it's a joke? I've never broken my word in my life. What's so funny about that?
Nothing. Why the cuffs if you gave your word?
Sully has a suspicious nature, I suppose. Anyway, when Joe Marr wasn't there, we followed his tracks out here.
Marr heard him as he stepped up with his hands raised, his pistol hanging on his thumb by the trigger guard.
You jackpotting rat! You brought the law down on me?
Give me the pistol, Joe. Right now.
Why? It's empty.
Don't ask why. Just drop it off your thumb. I'm a little put out with you anyway. You didn't do like I asked you to. You nearly got us both killed.
Sorry.
He handed the pistol to Two Jack.
I don't need no pistol to handle this snake. Give me a minute alone with him. I'll rip his double-crossing gypsy head off.
Would you really do something like that, Joe? What, with me standing here unable to defend myself?
Why, you better believe I would. I'd do it quicker than a tomcat can scratch his...
Charlie Quicksim snapped a hard boot toe straight into Marr's crotch.
Oh, I'll get him in jail. He'll wish to God he was never born.
All right now, hush up, Joe. Take a deep breath.
After a little time for Marr to recover, the three men moved into the cave. Two Jack Roth, Quick Charlie Sims, and Joe Marr stood back at the edge of the lantern's glow deep inside the cave. At the center of the light, Sullivan Hart sat slumped on his knees with the body of his father, Deputy Coleman Hart, raised across his lap, the dead lawman's head pressed to Sullivan's chest.
Oh, Dad. Look at you.
Quick Charlie looked down from the side of it and stood with his head bowed, his bowler hat hanging from his hand. Two Jack Roth nudged Quick Charlie Sims and nodded at a spot on the stone floor where the words Los Pistoleros had been smeared in blood. Sims raised his face enough to read the bloody scrawl. His eyes took on a knowing glint of recognition.
If you're not gonna go over there to him, I am.
No. Stay here.
The big Cherokee moved in beside Sullivan Hart and lay a hand upon his shoulder.
Easy, Sully.
Look what they did to him.
Two Jack stared down at Coleman Hart's gray, dead face and saw where someone had sliced off the old lawman's ears, either before or after they'd shot him. His breath drew tight in his broad chest. He turned his gaze back toward Charlie Sims and Joe Marr. His shoulders straightened when he saw that Joe Marr was standing there alone.
Where's Sims?
He was just here.
Roth started to bolt toward the front entrance, but then he saw Sims coming in with a rolled-up tarpaulin in his hands.
I'm back. I just went and got this from Sully's horse. Thought we'd need it.
Thanks, Sims. Help me with him, Sully. Come on. Let's get him home.
Together, Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth wrapped the body in canvas. When Coleman Hart's body was wrapped and tied and ready for the trail, Roth and Sullivan stood for a while, looking down at it.
They shouldn't have done him that way.
Nobody should be done that way.
Roth nodded at the two words written in blood on the stone floor.
Remember them? Los Pistoleros? Is that what Coleman was trying to tell us?
Los Pistoleros. The gunman. Yeah, I'd say so. But I haven't heard of that bunch in years.
Me neither. Who were they, Joe? Give us some names.
Boys, I don't know. I swear I don't. Like I told you, Roth, they showed up last night, every one of them dressed boardwalk fancy. Never asked if they could stay or nothing else. They just said they was meeting the Englishman here. And they did.
Lord Tilford? From the old English spread?
Yep, that's who they met with. Except Tilford ain't no real lord, and I know it.
He's a long way off his graze. The old English spread is 300 miles to the north, if they're still in business. They caught a hard freeze last winter.
Don't ask me. I'm plumb broke up over this.
Then why were you guarding Roth? I saw it from up on the ridges.
He couldn't help it, Sully. They gave him no choice. We settled up, though. Joe helped me make my play on them.
Anything else you can tell us, Marr?
No, not much. except one of them carried a golf ball and played with it all the time. I believe he's the leader.
Hart and Roth looked at each other, puzzled.
You know, one of them got a perch of balls, like rich fellas swap back and forth with a golf stick?
We know what they are, Joe. You say this fellow played with one?
All the time. Kept bouncing it up and down in his hand. Got on my nerves.
How'd they get the drop on you two, Jack?
It was my fault. Coleman and I got caught off guard coming down into the long end of the draw. They shot our horses out from under us so fast we...
I'm sorry, too, Jack. You don't need to explain yourself to me.
Hart stooped back down beside his father's canvas-wrapped body and laid a hand on its chest.
You always said you're the best tracker in the nations.
It went wrong on us, Sully. I'm not trying to pass off the blame, but these were no ordinary rustlers or saddle tramps. It all happened so quick, I didn't even get a good look at the leader's face. Let's get back to Fort Smith. Let the judge know about it. Sims, you and Joe give us a hand here.
Joe Marr bent down beside Sullivan Hart, but when Quick Charlie Sims didn't step forward, Two Jack peered around the outer edge of thin lantern light.
Sims? Where'd Sims get off to now?
It was right here beside me.
Sims! Sims!
Forget it. Sims has left us afoot here.
That dang gypsy.
After galloping for an hour, Quick Charlie Sims had found a small stream where he stopped to let his horse drink. He slipped Sullivan Hart's rifle from the saddle scabbard and led the Morgan upstream a few yards, then hitched it amid some pale sweetgrass in the flickering shadow of a willow's brake. While the Morgan grazed, Sims backed a few feet into the willows and sank down with the rifle across his lap. For a moment, Sims thought about taking the handcuffs the rest of the way off, but then he thought better of it. Maybe he better wait on that, see what wearing handcuffs might be worth to him. Two Jack's key was safely tucked behind his belt. He could get rid of the cuffs anytime. He was free now. That was the main thing. He smiled and laid back and looked up through the swaying willow whips into the blue sky. Quick Charlie Sims, on the run again. Some things never seem to change. Quick Charlie felt a little bad about taking off with the only horse in the place, leaving Kid Sully with no way to haul his father's body back to Fort Smith. He also felt a little bad about picking Two Jack Roth's pockets for the key to the handcuffs. But neither of those would have listened to reason if he had tried talking to him about Los Pistoleros. There'd been no point in wasting time. A half hour passed, and when he saw that the sweat on the Morgan's sides and around its girth strap had dried into white streaks, he rose up and stretched, then stepped out of the willows. He looked all around as he tightened the horse's cinch, and then he swung up on the saddle.
Well, now that we've properly communed, let's get some ground behind us.
Sims only followed the tracks of the four horsemen a few miles farther, long enough to see that they were sticking to the winding valley trails heading to the northeast. He stopped the Morgan on the trail and considered the long ride ahead of him.
Now that's the long way, boys.
He looked off to his right along the high hillside, where bare-washed stone ridging hung as if suspended from the sky. Sims considered the high, rugged trail for a second. Then Quick Charlie patted the horse's withers and turned it off the trail with a touch of the reins, urging it upward, leaning forward as it climbed. Evening shadows stretched long across the winding valley trail and stood in black pools beneath deep cliff overhangs. One of the riders kicked his horse forward a few steps and settled it alongside their leader, J.T. Priest.
Up there, Mr. Priest. I saw a rider through the trees. I'm sure I did.
J.T. Priest drew his horse to a halt. His eyes scanned back and forth in the graying evening light, seeing the rider but searching for any others up there. Three horsemen bunched up around him. He watched as the Black Morgan cross-stepped into view and stopped. Both horse and rider backlit now in the failing sunlight, their shadows standing as one, cascading down the rocky hillside.
Raising his all get out. Want me to lift him out of his saddle, Mr. Priest?
Now, don't shoot. You and Norris get up there. Flank him, and bring him down here.
The Big Morgan began a slow walk down toward them.
Looks like he's coming on his own, Mr. Priest.
Are you gonna make me say it again, Stanley?
No, sir. Let's go, Norris.
They spread out as they climbed until they had the Morgan and its rider between them, 20 yards apart. Then they turned and moved back down, keeping their eyes on the lone rider, seeing the cuffs on his wrists.
I recognize that sucker.
How can you see his face in this light?
Kearns, if you can only recognize a man by seeing his face, you'll be blind all your life.
J.T. Priest sat still, watching until Quick Charlie Sims moved down and halted the Morgan Cross less than 15 feet away. Priest took note of the handcuffs.
Is there something we can do for you?
Yeah, I could use a drink of water.
J.T. Priest looked bemused, and he tilted his chin to Stanley Lane. Stanley lifted his canteen by its strap, stepped his horse closer, and handed it to Sims.
Anything else?
Yeah. Any way you can get these cuffs off me?
Now, why would we want to do that? We didn't put them on you.
No. But his son did.
Do say. So you were back there?
Yep, I was there. You made a mistake leaving those two boys alive. Kid Sully and Two Jack Roth will be after you from now on.
Oh? Which one is his son?
Well, you might as well say they both are. They'll both be gunning for you once Judge Parker hears what happened. He'll give them a wide berth on this.
And now you're gonna convince me there's some way you can help me. There's something you, and only you, can do for me.
Nope. I just came to throw in with you. I'm on the run, needing work, and figured I'd take a chance. You lost three men back there. Los Pistoleros is no secret now. They know you're back in business. The old man wrote the name in his own blood before he died.
As I recall, the last time we spoke, I asked you about working for me, and you said you weren't gonna be anybody's flunky.
I know, but things change. I made a mistake, a bad one. Now I've got to swallow a big bite of pride. Let me join you, Tuck. I'll do whatever you ask.
I see. Boys, meet Mr. Quick Charlie Sims, also known by some as Charlie Roma, Charlie Magic, and the Gypsy Prince, also known in French Lick as the man who outshot Diamond Sammy Grubbs so bad, Grubbs swore off billiards forever. Am I leaving anything out, Sims?
Please, talk. You're embarrassing me.
Ned Norris looked at Kenny Kearns and then the others.
Tuck?
He'd never heard anybody call J.T. Priest Tuck.
Watch your money around Quick Charlie, boys. Especially you, Stanley. I know you love to play checkers. So, tell me, Sims, how's your golf game these days?
My golf game's still good, I'm sure. Haven't played any in a while, but I trust it. How's yours?
Oh, it's tolerable. Of course, I only play for the enjoyment of the game.
Me too. Never take the game too serious. What do you say, Tuck? Can we get these things off me?
We'll have to leave those cuffs on you for a while. We'll see what we've got to cut them off back at the rails. I have my Pullman car waiting there.
Oh, traveling your own private car now. Sounds like you're doing pretty well for yourself.
It's not just a private car. It's a private Pullman car. I might as well tell you now, Sims. Kate McCorkle joined my party a few weeks back. She's traveling with me now. You do remember dear Kate, don't you?
Yeah, I remember Kate McCorkle. And you certainly are traveling first class these days.
I arranged a pardon for her through some people I know in Denver. She owes me, Sims. She'll be beholden to me for a long time to come. What do you think of that?
Kate's her own woman, Tuck. She always was.
Oh?
I'm not denying anything, Tuck. We had our times up close, her and I. But we always knew that what we had was strictly business.
I see.
The group began moving at a walk. Sims and Priest moved their horses a few yards forward of the others.
I'm sure you realize Kate knows nothing about what I'm doing out here. If you should happen to mention anything to her about that unfortunate incident back at the cave, I'll have to have you shot, of course.
Well, my lips are sealed. If you don't mind me asking, Tuck, what are you doing out here? This all looks a little beneath you.
I can't help it, Sims. I simply have to put my hand in now and then. Call it returning to my roots, I suppose.
I understand.
So, tell me, Sims, do you have any idea what Coleman Hart was doing back there?
I don't know. I was with Kid Sully looking for Joe Marr, the old boy who was back there with the cattle. Why do you ask?
Nothing. Just curious. Cattle. I get in trouble every time I get around them.
Quick Charlie nodded as they rode along. He was in now, and that's exactly what he wanted. Now he had to settle back, get as far into Los Pistoleros as he could. J.T. Priest wasn't the only leader of the gang. There was another man who also used to keep a collection of ears on a string. Sims wanted him, too.
Let me ask you something important. Let's say, every time you hit a ball, it goes good and straight for about 75 yards or so. Then all of a sudden cuts straight up and sharp to the right. What are you doing wrong?
Straight up to the right. You know someone who's having that kind of problem?
Yes, I surely do.
Oh, that's a rough one. The straight up part. But let me think about that. You know, maybe if you get these cuffs off of me, we can hit a few balls for practice and see what we can come up with, huh?
What's your hurry, Quick Charlie? I like you in handcuffs. It gives me a real sense of security.
Huh. No kidding. I never knew I made you nervous.
You don't.
Judge Charles Isaac Parker, the hanging judge, stroked his fingertips down his smooth goatee, and he looked out through his office window. He had three good deputies missing out there somewhere. Nearly 2 full weeks had passed since he'd had any word from either Coleman Hart or his partner, 2 Jack Roth. To make matters worse, it had been over a week since he'd heard from Coleman's son. What made this such a predicament was the fact that he'd released a prisoner into Sullivan's custody. Parker's critics would love hearing that. While it wasn't uncommon for any of his deputies to be gone like this for long periods of time, given the demands of their job, it was unheard of to release a man like Quick Charlie Sims under any circumstances, a man suspected of both robbery and murder. What in the world had possessed him to do something like this, he chastised himself. There were those who questioned his sanity to begin with. This would only convince him that the hanging judge had truly lost his mind. Charles Isaac Parker had never liked that title, but it was a mantle he had reconciled within himself. He'd accepted that from now on, wherever he went, whatever he did, he would be the hanging judge for the rest of his life. Although it was not a title commonly spoken in his presence, he'd heard it whispered too often as he walked the streets of Fort Smith. He saw it clearly in the eyes of those who would never be so coarse as to say it, as they shook his hand and told him what an honor it was to meet him.
An honor indeed.
Parker gazed out through the dust-scalloped window of his office, a converted brick barracks inside the old military post, and he searched the distant sky as if his deputy's whereabouts might be revealed to him.
Judge, sir, your honor.
Parker recognized the voice of one of his deputies, old Dan Slater.
Yes? Come in, Dan.
I'm begging your pardon, your honor. But I thought you'd want to know about this right away.
What is it? News about the Harts?
Yes, sir, and I'm afraid it's all bad news, your honor. Coleman's dead, sir. His son Sullivan and 2 Jack Roth just arrived with his body.
Where are they, Daniel?
Over at the undertaker's, your honor. They also brought in that cattle rustler, Joe Marr. if that's worth anything to you now.
It's always worth something, Daniel. It's their job to bring in lawbreakers. Deputy Coleman Hart knew the risks better than anyone. He was with me here since the first day I took office.
I know that, sir. I ought to tell you this before you go over there. Whoever killed old Coleman cut off both his ears.
Cut off his ears? Good Lord, man. All right, Daniel. Please go out there and tell my bailiff I'll be back within the hour.
Yes, sir. Consider it done. Are you sure you don't want me to go with you?
No, but thank you, Daniel.
Judge Parker found his deputies in the waiting room of the undertaker's office. He looked at the sweat-streaked faces of Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth. Joe Marr sat in a wooden chair against the wall, his eyes lowered, one hand cuffed to the chair arm. Marr looked up at Parker and then back down at the floor. At the end of a tight, grim silence, Sullivan Hart took a step forward.
We could have gone after him, but we wanted him to have a proper burial first.
I understand. Did Quick Charlie Sims have a hand in this?
No, sir, he didn't.
Where is he?
He's gone, sir.
Gone? Are you saying gone as in dead, or gone as in he's gotten away?
He stole my horse, sir. Luckily, we rounded up some of the other horses running astray.
Oh, they're gonna throw a fit up in Creed. I never should have let that man out of custody. For the life of me, I don't know quite how it came about. I had him brought to my office to question him about Joe Ma's whereabouts, and the next thing you know...
Nobody's to blame here, Your Honor, unless it's me. I'm the one who lost him. Things just have a way of happening when Quick Charlie Sims is involved. He's too slick to deal with. I trained that Morgan horse to stand on command, but Quick Charlie rode him out from under our noses.
I see. I want him back. Dead or alive. The alive part is quite immaterial at this point.
I understand, Your Honor. But let me make it clear. He had nothing to do with any of this. He just saw a way out for himself and he took it. He even kept his word that he wouldn't make a run for it once the shooting started.
His word? He promised me as soon as he got back, he'd show me how to put a man's king into check in three simple moves. So much for his word.
Your Honor, you played chess with Quick Charlie Sims? Nobody plays chess with Sims.
I heard that about billiards and checkers, but not about chess. Chess is a gentleman's game.
No, Your Honor. It's not just billiards and checkers. It's chess, poker, billiards, croquet. He can't play games of any kind.
All right, so I was mistaken. Let's forget about Quick Charlie Sims for now. Tell me everything that happened out there.
Funeral was small and brief beneath a boiling thunderhead that drifted in from the southwest as if on cue. Looming swollen and dark above them, gathering itself in and churning. It seemed to wait for the preacher's final amen before busting loose in a hard, sidelong blowing deluge. All others had left, some of them in a hunched trot, eager to get out of the rain. Yet Sullivan Hart and Two Jack remained, one on either side of the grave, where the workmen had left their shovels standing in the mound of fill dirt before withdrawing out of the storm. They both walked to the end of the grave and picked up the mud-stuck shovels and began filling in the grave.
He was a good lawman, my pa.
I know it. We got along good, him and me.
He buried him without his ears. What kind of men do something like this?
I don't know, sir. But we'll make them pay.
Where do you want to start? The Englishman?
Might as well. After this wash, we can forget any tracks. With no federal marshal here right now, Parker will have to give us jurisdiction.
He'll give it. Either way, I'm still going.
Me too. I won't come back till it's over.
The next morning, the storm had passed, and they stood dressed in their road clothes, ready in their horses and shooting gear. Judge Parker came into the livery barn and stood striped in gray morning light through the cracks in the front wall.
I have some paperwork for you. You'll need this along the way should your authority come into question. And from what you say about these men, they'll use every trick in the book to avoid capture, including legal maneuvers before it's over.
They can try.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Sullivan Hart folded the papers and put them inside his bib front shirt.
Perhaps you should read them?
I will, sir. First chance again.
Sullivan Hart slipped the leather straps of his shoulder harness across his back and adjusted the holster up under his left arm. He picked up his pistol from atop a bale of straw.
The warrant does read dead or alive, I'm sure.
You realize if you bring these men in, there are no witnesses to testify that they killed your father.
I saw them take him into the cave. When we catch up to them, witnesses won't be an issue, Your Honor.
I understand. I just wanted to know we're all of the same mind. Until I hire a new federal marshal, I'll expect a weekly wire from you, if possible. If not, please keep me informed as often as you can. Coleman was a good friend of mine, as you both know.
We know, Judge. We'll go as far as we need to, and we'll do whatever needs doing. That's all we can say right now.
Good luck to you both.
A musky smell of buffalo wafted on the hot breeze blowing through the open car window. Along with the buffalo musk came the slight odor of wood smoke from the engine stack, mingled with the aroma of hot oil and steam. Quick Charlie Sims picked up the stack of dollar bills from the green felt tabletop and leaned back in his chair. He riffled the money, then folded it and shoved it down in his shirt pocket. When the door at the front end of the Pullman car opened, he looked up for a second and nodded as Kate McCorkle walked past without acknowledging him. She stopped at the ornate brass-trimmed bar with her back to him and poured herself a drink. Sims had only seen her for a moment when he first arrived with J.T. Priest 3 days earlier. She greeted him in a polite yet constrained manner and had avoided him ever since.
I won't even try to guess what sort of angle you're playing, Charlie Sims. But the first chance you get, I want you out of here.
Believe me, Kate, whatever I'm doing here, it has nothing to do with you. I had no idea you were with J.T. Priest until he told me. By then, it was too late for me to turn back. I'm on the run, Kate. I knocked on the first door I came to.
Then I was right about one thing. You didn't come here looking for me.
What did you want to hear, Kate? Did you want me to lie to you? Tell you I've been trying to find you all this time? I don't want to do that.
Then don't. You always know when to lie and when not to. So if you're telling the truth, it must be for a reason. But I'm settled here, Charlie. Don't ask anything of me. I won't let you do anything to destroy this for me.
If you're really happy, Kate, I won't destroy things for you. I couldn't if I tried.
Why are you here?
Like I said, I'm on the run. Right now, I'm powerless to do anything for myself. I hope to throw in with Los Pistoleros for a while, just long enough to get back on my feet.
You're never helpless. Even if you were, Los Pistoleros is not what it used to be. They're strictly legitimate now.
Oh? And I'm not.
You know what I mean, Charlie. JT has turned this into a big business. This isn't a three-card molly hustle or some sleight of hand. There's nothing for you here.
Tuck seems to think there might be. I think they still rob banks, railroads, and anything else they get their hands on. Does that strike you?
Don't be ridiculous. They own banks and interests and railroads. They're not outlaws anymore.
Is that a fact? Then what was Tuck Priest doing out in the dirt getting his hands dirty, Kate?
No. I won't do this. I promised myself I wouldn't talk to you about JT or their business or anything that would get me involved with you again. So don't ask. Los Pistoleros is dead and gone, Charlie. They're an investment business now. JT and his associates saw times were changing and they were smart enough to change with them. Something you should have thought about doing. That's all I'll say.
Don't kid yourself, Kate. J.T. Priest might be legitimate on the surface, but underneath, he is the same thieving, murdering scoundrel he always was. He still collects ears.
I don't believe that.
Of course you don't. Why was he out there?
He and William Mawbrey just bought the Old English Spread, if you must know. J.T. is only here to make sure the transaction went smoothly. Once we leave here, we're headed back east. hopefully for good.
William Mabry, huh? So Mad Dog Mabry still has his hand in Los Pistoleros, too.
Nobody calls him Mad Dog anymore, Charlie. Bill Mabry spends his time in Washington these days, rubbing shoulders with politicians. He doesn't even come west to check on his holdings anymore.
I bet. That's what he's got old Tuck Priest doing.
Nobody calls him Tuck anymore, either. That's all I've got to say about it. You're not going to pry information out of me. I'm not going to be your dupe, Quick Charlie. Leave me out of whatever you're up to.
You're right. I'm sorry, Kate. I won't ask anything else about them.
Good.
A silence passed while she finished her drink in two long sips and set the empty glass on the bar.
So, how have you been? Or should I even bother to ask?
I think I've already summed up how I've been.
He showed cuffs on his wrist.
Don't tell me Quick Charlie Sims is down on his luck. I wouldn't believe it.
Well, there's luck, and then there's luck, Kate. Things haven't been right for me since Colorado. Somebody set me up for that bank robbery in Creed, and I've been on the dodge ever since. You know I didn't rob that bank, Kate. People rob banks because they're either desperate or not sharp enough to do anything else.
I don't know what you're capable of doing, Charlie, but don't ever mention Colorado to me. It still gives me bad dreams. That part of my life is over, and good riddance.
I understand, Kate.
Oh, do you? I spent a miserable 10 months in prison there, Charlie. 10 long, terrible months just because I wouldn't say the one name they wanted me to say. Did you know that? Did you, Charlie?
No. No, I didn't. But I would never have expected that of you, Kate. You could have said whatever you wanted to. I was already in the jackpot and wouldn't have held it against you.
I'm certain you wouldn't. But I would have. I would have held it against myself. Wanna know why, Charlie? I'll tell you why. Because I was a fool. But not anymore. From here on, Kate looks out for Kate, and nobody else. Do you understand that, Charlie? Nobody else.
Kate settled herself and returned to stare, all business now.
This hasn't been a scam for me, Charlie.
I understand. But nevertheless, it's time to strike your tent and load your wagon.
I see. Then there's nothing I can do or say to stop you?
Nothing. Not unless you put a bullet in my brain or warn Tuck Priest about me. This goes back a long way, Kate. Nothing will stop it. It's old business between Priest and me.
The bank robbery in Creed. Is that what this is about?
He didn't answer.
Huh. I see. Thanks for warning me. I'll be ready. As ready as I can be on short notice.
Later in the day, the train stopped and a group of men exited. 20 yards out on a low rise, the four men stood in a semicircle, studying the ground below. Each man held a rifle, either propped on his shoulder or hanging from his hand. In their midst, a tall man in a long pinstriped dress coat stooped down and ran his pearl gray glove back and forth across the dirt.
And now, that should do it.
He stood up, took off his gloves, pulling it one finger at a time, and looked out across the endless roll of prairie toward a small herd of buffalo some 700 yards away.
Oh, another thing, Devers.
He spoke over his shoulder at a small man who sat trembling on the ground a few feet back from the others.
Don't forget to mention something about how sorry you are. How you brought shame to your poor wife, your lovely daughter, and so forth and so on. People eat that stuff up, don't they, Kearns?
Oh, hell yes, Mr. Priest. It gives a really solid, personal sort of touch to it.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Priest nodded and spread a pale hand outward across the prairie.
Have you much experience in this?
Well, no, sir, Tuck. This is my first time, but I've always wanted to.
Well, then just watch and learn, Kenny. Who knows? You may be called upon at some time.
J.T. Priest held his black silk top hat in place against the strong wind blowing across the plains. and gazed at the distant small herd of buffalo.
Pitiful sight, Dad. Soon there'll be none left to kill.
That's the truth, Tuck.
You know, Kenny, wind is the single most important factor in making a good shot. I don't care how much you practice or how good you are. Ignore the wind in a long shot like this, and you'll never hit squat. You just won't, and that's the truth.
Yes, sir, Tuck. I'll remember that.
How's that letter coming, Devers?
Mr. Priest, in the name of God, please don't do this. I'll never say a word ever, not to anyone.
He's gonna start blubbering again, I bet.
Priest finally turned and looked at Lyle Devers, the paper flapping beneath his thumb on the writing pad, the ink pen trembling in his hand.
Devers, you pitiful wretch. We've been through all this. Now either write the note and sign it, or else forget all about it. I'm not gonna argue with you. Can't you see I'm trying to concentrate here?
But Mr. Mulberry swore nothing like this would ever happen. He gave his word, for both of you.
Perhaps I should have mentioned that earlier on. It may have slipped my mind. But you see, my dear partner, Mr. Mad Dog Mulberry, is a liar, a scoundrel, and a murdering thief. I'd have to say I'm a bit surprised you didn't notice that back when you first agreed to do business with us. It would have made this so much simpler.
Mad Dog? I never heard Mr. Mulberry called that.
He never heard him called Mad Dog, and I never heard him called anything else. I suppose one hears only what one chooses. Now let's go through this one more time. Your bank signed for and billed the government on our behalf for tons of beef that were never delivered to the reservations, correct?
Well, yes, but I never thought...
Follow me on this. Your bank handled over $1 million in counterfeit cash and bearer bonds.
Please, Mr. Priest. Nobody will ever know, I swear to God.
Show some guts, man. They already know. That's why we have to kill you. You danced the dance, now the fiddler must be paid. You don't want a man with a name like Mad Dog sending a few of his men to call on your wife and lovely daughter, do you?
No! Please, no! No!
There, then. It's all settled. Get the letter finished and signed. And try to hurry. You're holding up a sporting event. Now then, where was I?
He took off his top hat and dress coat and handed them to Kenny Kearns. He gazed out once more across the plains. The wind had lessened now, and he judged it again, and he smiled.
Perfect.
Priest bent down, picked up the long driver club from the ground, tested its hickory shaft between his hands, then positioned himself above the gutta percha golf ball he had placed on the ground.
Everyone quiet now. Devers, don't you dare snivel back there whilst I shoot.
Priest followed the ball with his club, his head bending slightly when at 60 yards the ball began a slice to the right.
Uh-oh.
The ball sliced harder right, until at one point it may have intended to circle back like a boomerang. But then it drove away into the tall grass.
Damn it to everlasting hell!
J.T. Priest pounded the club head to the ground.
Who brought the rest of the damn balls, huh? Where are they? Give me a blasted ball!
Three balls appeared quickly on Kenny Kern's palm. Priest snatched one.
Lousy, rotten little bastard!
He bent down, scraped up a short mound of earth, and stood the ball on it. He stood back up, turned to Lyle Devers, and pointed at him with the club.
Get it finished and get it signed. How am I supposed to shoot with you back there carrying on, you sniveling coward?
Yes, sir.
All right. Remember the fundamentals.
He made his swing. The ball looped high and landed less than 50 feet out.
Damn it! Damn it to bloody hell!
He shot a crazed, wild-eyed glare at the engine of the train as he slung the golf club to the ground and snatched Kenny Kern's rifle from his hands.
Can anybody here drive a train? Huh? Can they?
He swung the barrel toward the engine.
Easy, Tuck. None of us are engineers. It's a long way to Abilene.
Don't tuck me, you punk. I'll blow your damn heart out, you understand?
Yes, sir, Mr. Priest. I understand.
Priest turned to Devers in a rage, his knuckles white on the rifle stock.
Is it finished? Is it signed?
Yes.
Devers shielded his hands above his lowered head as Priest stalked toward him. The letter fluttered in Devers' fingertips. Priest snatched it and looked it over, calming down some.
All right.
Now get up and get out of here. You're destroying my swing.
You mean, go? Out there?
Yeah, out there. Get going.
But I... What about my buggy?
Devers gestured a trembling hand toward his one-horse buggy waiting beside the train.
I said get going. Don't worry about your horse and buggy. I am not going to kill you, fool. You got my word. Now get out of my sight.
My daughter, Ellen? My wife?
I'm gonna count to three. You're not out of here. I swear to God, I'll shoot you where you sit.
Lyle Devers scooted sideways the first few feet. Then he came to his feet in a run, bounding out through the wild grass. The rifleman watched him for a second, then turned back to J.T. Priest.
Now then, maybe with that coward out of the way.
He took another ball from Kearns' hand, positioned it on the ground, and adjusted his stance. This time, the ball sailed upward and away. A good, strong shot that arced over 100 yards out.
You see? I don't think I need some jake leg like Quick Charlie Sims showing me how to hit a golf ball, eh? I got the hang of it now, boys. Kearns, watch this.
He mounted the ball, tended to his grip, adjusted his stance to exactly the same position, and brought the club back precise and perfect. Yet even as his eyes went upward to follow the shot, the ball only streaked straight out across the ground, whipping through the grass like some snake gone berserk. J.T. Priest stepped back and leaned on his golf club and shook his head. He pointed the club out toward Lyle Devers, who was over 100 yards away, bobbing up and down in the tall grass.
Will some of you please follow him out of sight, then kill that miserable wretch before he gets all the way to Texas on us? Get rid of the buggy, too.
As two of his men turned and trotted away, Priest grabbed Kenny Kearns' arms and stopped him from joining them.
Kenny, go bring out some more golf balls and bring Sims back with you.
Yes, sir. Want me to find a way to uncuff him first?
Nah, leave him cuffed. I just need him to give me a couple of pointers. God, this game makes me crazy!
For the past 2 days, Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth had been traveling on land belonging to the Old English. At dusk, they'd pitched a camp and struck up a low campfire for the night when three cowhands came riding in from the north out of the gray light. The three riders caught sight of the low fire and they moved closer with an air of caution until Two Jack Roth raised his rifle above his head and waved them in. Each rider led a short string of horses behind them. At the edge of the camp, alongside a narrow creek, the three men stopped for a second until one of them, an elderly drover, recognized Roth.
Hola, Two Jack. Can you spare some firelight?
Yep. Come on in, Cooney. The coffee's hot.
Cooney stepped forward ahead of the other two, taking off his leather gloves.
Much obliged. Haven't seen you in the longest time, Two Jack Roth. Good to see you too, Hart.
Evening, Cooney.
The other two men moved in closer to Cooney now, each carrying their own tin cups from their saddlebags.
At least a man can still round himself up a cup of coffee out here, I reckon.
These boys are Bob Robeson and Huey Clark. Boys, this is Two Jack Roth and Sullivan Hart. I heard what happened to your pa. Terrible thing. Never had nothing but respect for old Coleman. I hated hearing about it.
Thanks, Cooney. How'd you hear about it so fast? It's been no more than a week.
Word travels on the wind, I reckon.
Cooney and the other two circled the fire and stooped down.
Fella rode through here past the main house 3 days ago. Said he was in Fort Smith the day you brought old Coleman's body in. I expect you're hunting the man what done it?
Yep. We don't have too much to go on. We're heading in now to talk to Tilford.
What for? Tilford ain't mixed up in it, is he?
No, but his name came up. We think maybe he knows the man who did it.
You won't be talking to Tilford.
Huey Clark was a young man, wearing a lizard skin vest over his faded blue rain shirt.
He's long gone up to Canada. Left here over a week ago.
Yep, it's the truth. The English spread sold out last month. Tilford was just waiting to get things settled up. He'll be headed all the way back to England before long, is my guess.
For 2 cents, I'd have gone with him. This is the first time I've been out of work since 54. Might give up cattle for good and go to playing banjo for a living.
The new owner let you go?
Oh, yeah, real quick. They brought in their own cowhands, if you want to call them cowhands. Looked more like a bunch of grifters and sporting men, if you ask me.
Sporting men, huh? You mean well-dressed?
Yep. Too well-dressed for drovers, I'd say. Unless they's carrying work clothes in their spindles.
Hell, it don't matter, though. There ain't a lick of cattle on this place now. Mexican rustlers cleaned them out 3 weeks back.
Ha! Rustlers my Aunt Mabel's wooden leg. They can call it rustling if they want to. But I know better.
What are you saying, Cooney?
What happened is, Tilford cut a deal. He sold off the cattle to the new owners a week before the sale tally took place. I figure they bought them from him, then he declared them stolen. That way the new owners had to pay the shareholders in England for the land itself. Tilford cashed in on the cattle.
Hush up, Cooney. You don't know that for a dead level fact.
I don't know for a dead level fact that rain falls from the sky, but all the evidence I've ever seen sure points that way. There ain't been no rustling of that size around here in years. Most we've lost is a few head now and then to some hungry Comanches what got tired of starving, waiting for the government beef that never came. And can't say as I blame them. I know slick thieving when I see it, boys.
These new men you're talking about, who's in charge of them?
Cleveland Phelps. Ever heard of him?
I heard of him. Never seen him, but if he's the one who shot Dan Trebold in Carson City, I've heard enough about him. He's a big gunfighter from the Wind River country.
Well, there you are. Need I say any more? He's the one in charge back there for now. Nothing more than a hired killer is what he is. I heard of him years ago. He used to ride with a gang called Los Pistoleros right after the war. Ever hear of them?
Why don't you hush, Cooney? You said too much already. Sounds like you just got a mad on because we lost our jobs.
I hate being out of work, that's true. But boys, with that kind of men running the old English, I'd just as soon not be around.
Who are the new owners?
That's anybody's guess. Owners don't have faces anymore. They've only got company names. Some speculators from back east bought the spread. They call themselves the Midwest Alliance. They play with trains like they was kids' toys. They're supposed to cut a rail spur out here all the way from Teasdale Sidings. If they do, it'll cut a cattle drive down to a 100-mile jaunt. Then everybody'll be out of work. A fellow by the name of J.T. Priest is half owner, best I could understand. He's just a thug in a white shirt for my money.
You met him?
Yeah, we met him for all of about 5 minutes. I personally weren't all that impressed.
So with Tilford gone, are you still riding into the main house?
We came this far. We'll go on in, have a look around. Maybe this Cleveland Phelps can tell us something.
You're all welcome to pitch a blanket here.
We was hoping you'd say so.
Later that night, Sullivan Hart felt a tap on his shoulder that woke him up.
Uh-huh.
He raised his head from his saddle on the ground and blinked his eyes.
What is it, Cooney?
Huey Clark's gone, Sully. I got up to take Jake, and he ain't to be seen.
Gone? Gone where?
From the looks of his tracks, I'd say he's headed back toward the main house. Must have been in a hurry. He didn't even take his string along with him.
Sullivan Hart looked back, seeing 2 Jack Roth already rolling his blankets up on the ground.
Roth, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
If you're thinking we might be in for an ambush up ahead, yeah, I suppose so. I've already been ambushed once this month. I don't intend for it to happen again.
Me neither. We'll need to use Huey Clark's spare horses.
Help yourself. It'd serve him right if you kept every one of them.
Just then, Robeson got up to his feet.
Damn Huey's hide. He must have figured he'd run back and tell Cleveland Phelps you're coming. Thinks he might get his job back for him.
I don't know what's wrong with Huey. He ain't acted right ever since that big she-cat got his head in her mouth 2 winters back. Reckon me and Robeson ought to ride along with you? Phelps might not like answering any questions from a lawman.
Thanks, Cooney, but no. Roth and I will handle it from here. Phelps shouldn't mind us coming unless he's got something to hide.
That's what I'm getting at. Men like Cleveland Phelps have always got something to hide.
Instead of riding the flatland trail to the main house, Sullivan Hart and two Jack Roth swung wide of it, up into a stretch of rocky hills. They started out on the spare horses they had taken from Huey Clark's string. When those two horses wore down, they turned them loose, saddled their rested mounts, and came down from the hills behind the house, moving forward slow and still to keep down any rise of dust from their horses' hooves. Hart and Roth stopped a mile back from the house in the dark shade of a low cliff overhang.
How long will it take, do you think?
The idea was for Hart to hold the horses back out of sight, while Roth slipped the rest of the way in on foot. Two Jack gazed through his telescope toward a dry wash a half mile to their left. He saw two men with shovels step over the edge and disappear from sight.
Not as long as we thought. Take a look at this.
Sullivan Hart took the telescope and adjusted it to his eye. The first thing he saw through the wavering lens was Huey Clark's body lying stretched out along the edge of the wash. As he watched, one man stepped up from the dry wash and dragged the body over the edge. Hart scanned the distance over to the main house and across the empty yard. He noted the open doors to the horse barn, the empty hitch rail, and the broad shade of a white oak tree.
These two are the only ones here. We're in luck.
For my money, they are. But we better move quick before the others figure out we've swung around them.
Which do you want? Those two or the house?
I'll get these two and bring them on in. You go make sure the house is empty first.
Suits me.
Once Roth had led his horse off in the other direction, Hart slipped forward, keeping close to the shade of brush and scrub juniper until he'd reached within 100 yards of the main house. Then he tied the horse's reins to a stand of brush and moved the rest of the way forward in a crouch with his rifle across his chest. 20 yards from the back door, Hart waited and listened. At the edge of the dry wash, Two Jack Roth stood up with his pistol drawn and cocked, then pointed it down at the backs of the two men digging a narrow grave. The men stopped digging.
What? Who?
He motioned them up from the dry wash with his pistol barrel. After they stepped up over the edge, Two Jack reached out and lifted their pistols, pitching them sidelong away.
I had a vision last night, and in my vision I saw myself killing two men. Now, the question is, was it you two, right here and now? Or will it be a couple of others later on today?
We don't want trouble.
The man nodded toward Huey Clark's body on the ground.
We didn't do this either. We found this poor wretch alongside the road and...
That's enough. Let's go.
Two Jack waved him toward the house with his pistol barrel.
Anybody else in there?
No, sir. Just us. I'm Cobb, he's Macklin. We're just traveling drummers, happened by and found the place empty. That's the truth, so help me God.
He's not lying, mister.
I know you both work for Cleveland Phelps, and that him and some other Los Pistoleros are out there waiting for me and my partner right now.
Los Pistoleros? What's that?
I'd better warn you both. It's going to really disappoint my partner if you get in there and start lying. He goes crazy when people lie to him. Move along now, Mr. Cobb and Mr. Macklin. And don't forget my vision.